Hello. Welcome to this First Thoughts edition of the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast, presented by Ronizone Media and Ronizone.com. There are a number of ways that you can stay connected and interact with the show. Our main website address is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our Twitter name is OUAT Podcast. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/OUAT Podcast. Our email address is feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. And our voicemail line phone number is 657-333-0626. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. Your hosts are Jeff and Colleen Roney from Orange County, California. And now, on with the show.
Orange County, California, which is the last group to see the show, so.
Yeah. Well, Hawaii is technically behind us.
Right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. And we have just seen The Miller's Daughter.
Yes, we have.
And that was quite an episode.
Yeah. Hats off to Jane Espenson for that one, because that was, wow, just stellar. I mean, Jane's an amazing writer anyway, but holy cow, that was a barn burner episode.
And we were right about a number of predictions, and we were wrong about at least one theory that we had.
Yes, that is true. That is true.
So we will jump in and roll through this. I should have brought some water. My mistake. So we saw Eva, pre-Queen Eva.
Yes.
Pull a little young Snow attitude.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of interesting to see. And I wonder what happened to her to change her mind about.
I think it was Leopold. Because look, she was originally potentially betrothed to Henry. So I think it was actually Leopold that changed her heart.
Interesting name to Henry,
right?
In the course of things,
right?
And we kind of figured that that would come up somewhere.
Sure. Well, so we know Regina's dad's name is Henry. So
right, and that's what I'm. Yeah. And did anyone else besides us know that Queen Eva, or Eva's father, was Bucho?
That wasn't Eva's okay. father. It was Henry's father.
Henry's father was Bucho from Desperado.
Yes. We recognized him, yeah. And we looked him up. And I knew the name. When I saw his name, Joaquim de Almeida, he's, I know I'm pronouncing that wrong, but he's Portuguese. So anyway.
So it was nice that we can finally talk about this, because we saw the... We saw this scene last week at the Paley Fest.
Right, the first opening scene.
And then, of course, it was one of the sneak peeks. So this has made its way around the internet a number of times. Yeah. Neil Cora.
Yeah, told her to kneel.
That was that moment. And we'll talk about another moment that Rumpel referred as a very important moment in Cora's life. You know, it's interesting that when I think of Gone with the Wind, I think of, and they call it a vow that, what's her name?
Scarlett O'Hara. As God is my witness, I shall never go hungry again.
That's it.
Go hungry again.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's those vows, those moments where you take a stand, you say, that's never going to happen again.
Right.
Whatever that is. So that's what it reminded me of. It was cute to see a father and son piloting a ship.
Yeah, that was really cute.
It was kind of neat.
Henry learning from dad. That was kind of fun. Nice little bonding moment.
Yep. And it was really interesting. They were talking, Emma was talking to Gold in the ship as they were going toward Storybrooke. And In the conversation, it was family is more important than justice.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you did all this stuff,
right?
Your family, and I will save you. It doesn't matter.
I'm gonna rescue you. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter. All the things you've done, you deserve a bunch of you deserve justice. But because you're family, because you're Henry's grandfather, I will save you.
Yep.
Really you know, blood's thicker than water, right, all that. Right. But it was just, I don't know.
Well, and the reality is, Emma realizes that anything negative to any of Henry's actual family members and people he loves is going to look bad on her. So anything she can do to save them is going to hopefully, you know, make up for the lies.
So Cora, in fact, did want to become the Dark One, and she was kind of spinning her her story to make it seem like, and she kept saying things like, our family, for us. And then she also said, they're going to be on their knee in front of, so it was just, yeah.
It was all about retribution for the humiliation she suffered at the hands of Eva and the king.
She also did another thing, which is pretty famous, a little device in a lot of different stories. She wore a mask to cover her poverty. You know, Aladdin, a lot of different things where people kind of put themselves as someone else.
Right.
So.
Right. And the opposite has been known to be true as well.
Prince and the Pauper and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And Cora said, I'm a goose.
Yes.
And I was wondering, a golden goose, or is it the ugly duckling kind of a reference? I don't know.
The ugly duckling was a swan, so no, it wouldn't have been that.
Yeah.
But that's why I think that was just, it was a very funny little line for her to say.
What is mutton, actually?
Mutton is lamb.
Okay. Interesting. So, Cora wanted to work for power and position.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just kind of interesting. She couldn't get it.
Right.
But she could work for it.
So yeah, she could. Yeah. And she even said at one point she recognized that this was all she was ever going to be. It was a Miller's daughter. Yep. And that was just, yeah.
But, I mean, that's kind of, that's another one of those innate human things where, you know, if you talk to a lot of people that are big stars, you say, who are you? And my country, I'm just a little girl. I'm just a little boy from wherever they are.
Right.
I'm just a poor kid from wherever. Most big stars, if you ask them, and if they're humble, mostly, they'll tell you, I'm just a little kid from Boston, or I'm a kid from whoever. I'm just a, you know, whatever. So you relate to how, yeah.
Right. Well, and that's because, I mean, most big name people do have to come from somewhere.
Right. But
a lot of them do come from very humble beginnings.
But she was known as the Miller's daughter.
Absolutely.
So
it was interesting that there was more than one Miller. And that even though her father was drunk and resting, the king still went ahead and bought the flower from them. Like,
yeah.
He could have bought it from others. So was that a, you know, a power play on his part that no, he really couldn't because there really weren't any. Maybe they had the best grain because she was really good at it.
Maybe she's prettier. I don't know.
Right. So. Maybe he kind of harbored a secret little thing for her, even though he wasn't supposed to.
She sounded just like Barbara Hershey. I really listened.
Yes.
And she sounded
just
like
her. She had a lot
like
of the same mannerisms. She looks a lot like her. So it was a very easy pull to see her as.
So what would make Cora say, tell you what, I'm going to spin straw into gold to prove to you.
She obviously knew that he was trying to sell his son to the highest bidder, whatever princess from some other kingdom. And that's why I think Eva was there, was she was potentially a you know, potential bride for Prince Henry. You know, whoever could come up with the highest price, well, okay, so if they need money, then what would happen? She knew how to spin because that was kind of probably part of her normal job. Not her job, but her, you know, her daily life, perhaps. Or maybe she just, it just kind of on a whim came to her.
I mean, obviously we know now that it's part of a really famous story and then also probably a central story to
right.
the series. But I've just that's not something I would kind of, anyway. So,
well, it's not, it wasn't unheard of for, you know, these peasants, as they called her, even, to know how to do the most basic of tasks. How do you think the royals got their stuff? They didn't do anything for themselves. So, well, back in the day, you couldn't go to the local, you know, Macy's or Kohl's and buy, you know.
But wasn't there an alchemy thing where they turned certain things into gold, and there was this kind of story about whatever?
But alchemy is more chemistry.
But there's a term where there's a lot of these magicians that they would, you know, I will turn this into gold.
There were snake oil salesmen who promised that all the time. But what I'm saying is that forget the whole spinning into gold, just the spinning part. She would know how to do right. that. Mm-hmm. But what would make it more valuable? Because most people back then knew how to spin, or at least, you know, the quote unquote lower class would have known how to spin, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So what would have made her say she could do something more extraordinary? Well, he was looking for something really important. Okay, well, gold is wealth. Gold is power. And she wanted that. She wanted to humiliate the living daylights out of those people. So
you saw somebody give somebody else a red quill. I missed that, but I wrote
it down. Yes, Rumpel gave it to her to sign the contract.
Okay.
It just happened to be a red feather quill.
So I think everybody kind of loved the reveal that Gold said, get me a blanket. I'm cold. And then he opened up what I would consider to be the talisman cabinet where the magical items are.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say hi to Mason. Mason used to call in a lot and talk about these magical items. So this is right up Mason's alley. This is the cabinet with the magical candle. That we saw last week.
Right.
So,
from the Blue Fairy, Cora.
Right. All right. And
so don't you see the irony in that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
She was, yeah.
Yeah, there's certain things called a lifeline in stories, like the air canisters in Jaws. You know, when they start to fall down, everyone says, be careful, those will explode. And those what were used to kill the shark.
Right.
And then in film class, I turned it around and I said, well, if that's a lifeline to rescue the hero, then there's got to be a death line.
Right.
And that's what the candle was.
Right.
So, anyway. Right. It was interesting because Neil acted like he could see that invisible chalk line.
I think he was yanking Emma's chain just to yank her chain.
Right.
I don't think he could see it because, I mean, it's possible, I suppose, but it just seemed like it was more like he was yanking her chain to try and, you know.
Yeah. We probably would have had an angle where we would have got his point of view and thinking about it more.
I would think so.
So,
I mean, it's kind of one of those things, hey, you missed a spot. I mean, that's just a joking thing. That's a messing around with somebody, especially because she was being so thorough.
That's a young kid kind of poking fun at the girl he really likes. And
right, yeah, that too.
So, yeah.
And then he apologized for Tamara. Didn't mean for her to be a surprise, that whole thing.
Yeah. All right. So then it was talking about there's two things that Snow could have done. Light the candle, kill Cora, and give life back to Gold, or she could find her heart, make her do the right thing, and he would die anyway. So that was kind of the two options that...
Right. And she was leaning towards that, going, you know what? Get rid of you. I don't have to deal with you anymore. And then I can also get Cora to do the right thing. I can control her. So, you know, that seems like a win-win. And then it was like Rumpel said, yeah, and... How do you think Henry's going to feel when he finds out you killed his grandfather?
Mm. It made sense that she went to the tomb. What is
mausoleum?
That? Mausoleum. Mm-hmm. Because she saw it last week or whatever.
Right. Right.
Recently.
Right.
And so more than likely she was saying, well, it's probably there. I have one issue is Cora's things, which were on Hook's ship.
Yes.
Should have been put in that magical room. But then it would have been a longer episode for her to like get in that room and find him. So they were just kind of out there. Anyway, it's just my...
Well, I think they recently got moved there, is what it seems like, because they weren't there before.
Right.
So when, you know, they found out that Archie wasn't dead and that they, you know, that whole thing, when Hook freed the giant, basically, that was when they, you know, realized... I think that's when they moved her things.
So then we switched from Once Upon a Time to Star Wars. And there were so many Star Wars-y-al things going on. Or Star Wars-ish. So. But.
Get more Star Wars-ian, but anyway.
Right.
I think that's funny.
So, you know, the master is still teaching students as he's dying. And, sure. You know, we talked about it before, is that we thought Emma was going to be the next student.
Yeah.
And we didn't see it for a while. Obviously, she'd been busy doing things, going to New York and all.
Right.
But now we see it again because we never get a reason why. Obviously, he's dying and he probably doesn't want to cast a spell. But it was kind of funny. She goes, I can spell. I can't cast a spell. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So, but he taught her how to cast a spell. And he said, it's in you.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's there. And he said, magic is emotion. And then now we see actually the connection between the two students. Mm-hmm. And I think Emma's going to continue on to learn more from him, I think.
I think so, too.
Because we do see that both sides of the scene, let's say, Cora learning, and then Emma also learning at that moment.
Oh, dude, and the scene with Cora learning?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Right.
Oh, well, my gravy.
You know, okay, it just came to, it reminded me of Ghost. that kind of a mundane task, making a pot, you know, clay, and spinning a wheel. But it was very, I mean, there was some sparks going on there.
There was some serious sparks going on. And I'm watching that whole scene going, I have no words. Because Rumpel, he doesn't strike you as being this, you know, just really sensual being, but he really is. Really, really is.
Well, and he told her, because she, Cora said, I can't do it. He said, no. Magic is about emotion. And what's interesting is Cora wasn't the savior. So I think the idea is everyone can be magical, I guess, because there was nothing really special about Cora. She was the Miller's daughter.
Right.
But for some reason,
well, he laid his hands on her.
Okay. All right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
He did. He had his hands all over her.
There's a lot of layers. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of Rumpelstiltskin a lot of the fans are really, they're really going to have a,
Well, you knew it was about to happen, and I'm going to say it. There were some shots of Rose McGowan that were just fantastical.
She's beautiful,
and she is. She
really is.
Yeah, and we'll leave it at that. You can figure out which ones
thought were great. Of course, I'm sure.
And, my wife's here, and it's fine, and we're talking about it. I'm a real guy. I'm a man. You're a woman.
Yes.
Our eyes work. So there you go.
Yep.
All right. So he was talking about the moment when the guy, Hordor, made him kiss his boot in front of his son.
Yeah.
And that was really that moment where, you know, he probably vowed, you know, and actually he kind of referred to it when he got his Dark One power, because he made him kiss his boot.
Yep.
And then he killed everybody.
Yep.
So he was saying that magic is emotion, and you need to focus on the time when you wanted basically to kill someone. And that would bring you to the point where you could do magic. Right. And, you know, very Jedi-like, you know, he said, don't, he said, you know, focus, don't think about it. I think they even said that in the Star Wars movie, don't think about it, but it said, trust your feelings.
Right. Right.
And, so he said, you know, there was a time and da da da. And so he explained that time to her. And as she started to talk about it, then she started to spin the straw into gold.
Right. Well, she got lost in the.
Well,
in
sure.
The,
yeah.
I mean.
Well, he got lost too. Yeah.
Well, and I was going to say, and, it would be very distracting. I would be lost in thought if he was doing that to me too. So.
Yep. Yep. And so Emma also found her magical power to cast a, I would imagine, a barrier spell.
Yeah.
And which was a not strong barrier spell.
No, but she's brand new to it. So, I mean, you figure, and her emotion was, it wasn't anger because she didn't feel the imminent threat. She was protecting the people inside the building. Let's think about who that is.
Right.
Her parents, Neil, Henry's grandfather, and herself.
Right.
If Henry had been there, I think it would have been a stronger spell.
So he was talking about emotions, emotions. And emotions can be good, but I think emotions are dangerous. I think when you act on emotions, that's when you send the tweet, send the email, do the thing, yell and scream, and say things that you don't mean.
Right.
And so the tapping into that is dangerous. And
yeah,
so that's why,
so
you know, that's why people say, you know, magic is, you know, it's dangerous.
Magic comes with a price.
Right. So he told Emma at one point, he said, just try. And Yoda said, there is no try. You just do it. But I think, you know, he has to kind of nudge her along. And Rumpel's emotion to keep dredging up that moment, whatever that is the opposite of forgiveness, because forgiveness is letting it go.
Right.
Which, you know, a very famous theme in Lost at the end, letting it go. And so to keep reliving that moment is not forgiving.
No, it's not.
And so, you know, the danger of, you know, bitterness and unforgiveness and all this kind of stuff, that kind of fuels the power of magic. So.
Yep.
It was interesting that when Emma cast her spell, she kind of bent her neck back. And I don't want to get into all the different things about that, but it's just, something took over her and
I think it was more that she was focusing so much.
Yeah.
And she was trying to envision, because it seemed like they kept cutting back and forth between, you know, her face and what was going on in her face and the spell itself coming up over the walls and over the building.
Yeah, and something happened. She tapped into something.
She did.
You know, was released from her. Or she allowed through something. But anyway, she's a magical savior being. So, but anyway, her neck kind of bent back a little bit, and it was interesting. One of the lines from Korra was, "I want their necks to break from bending." Just kind of
interesting. Oh, good pull. I didn't catch that.
And I put sexy Rumpel slash Korra, so there you go. And even at the end, it was just very electric. She goes, let's keep going. I was like, okay. All right. So, and when she was spinning the gold, we saw Rumpel in his famous kind of Jedi-esque cloak, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
So the invisible line didn't really do much, and I didn't know why it was used.
Well,
I don't know.
Okay, so I think that it did. Remember, they had to use a fireball together to get through the door.
Right.
I think because they realized there was a barrier or a protective spell around the building, And then they got in because I think they got through it that way. Because, again, when Emma did it the second time, when it was more critical, she was able to protect it and keep Cora from getting inside.
Right. And, again, we talked about the whole Star Wars kind of a clear barrier thing that kind of deflects certain... Right. Choose wisely to Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Last Crusade line. So
nice reference there, yeah.
The Cora mentioned that she was fifth in line to be queen.
Yes.
If she would marry Henry.
Right. So. But she didn't want to marry him. She didn't love him.
And
we kind of sensed that anyway.
They changed because Rumple started to fall for her. And I wrote initially, I said, Cora out-rumpled Rumple. Even the master, you know, I think he really was falling for her.
Oh, he absolutely did.
And that's why he kind of, you know, threw away his guard and changed the contract and just started to really, you know... let his guard down.
Well, sure. So. And I think that's because, if you ask me, I honestly believe it's because he was ready to move on from Mila. Mila was gone. He'd gotten his revenge at that point in time. So I think he really, truly was ready to move on and he wanted to find love.
Yeah. So we see another marriage for power, not love. And it's a pretty, pretty constant theme here. So.
Well, if you actually look at, you know, back in the, you know, day, marriages were made for strategic alliances and for advantageous, you know, matches. They weren't for love.
Right.
And they frequently
whatever.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. They frequently married their kids off to their first cousins, even. That's why you had a lot of inbreeding in the European...
Wow. It's taking a turn, huh?
No, it's the truth.
All right.
It's absolute historical fact. A lot of these folks were married to their first and second cousins and to keep the bloodline pure. So there's royal blood because you can't introduce a commoner into the bloodline.
Yeah.
That was a huge thing back in the way back centuries ago.
I saw a Chinese golden dog in was it Henry's father's study there?
You mean the Chinese lion?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it actually kind of reminded me of Tiny's room of gold stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know.
Well, it's a treasure room. That's where he was counting his treasure.
So how did the king know about Rumple and Cora?
I don't think she was all that discreet.
Okay.
Frankly, right. It didn't seem like
so. You may have somebody just kind of watching her,
probably,
and making sure.
Probably, okay. Yeah.
So, did Neil know Belle? Because when he said Belle, and then Emma said, "Well, that's your dad's girlfriend," he kind of paused, like, "Wait a minute, I know that name."
No, I don't think he did. Okay. I don't think he knew her. What I think he was surprised at, and he said it later. When Rumple was on the phone with Belle, he said, "I didn't know you had that in you." I think he was surprised that Rumple found someone to love.
So it's kind of like Charming said, "You know love."
Yeah, because Rumple doesn't come across as being somebody who understands, or knows, or even feels love, and yet he loves extremely deeply.
Well, and that's actually a classic. That's a classic Achilles heel for somebody like Rumple, because when he falls hard.
Oh,
he falls all the way.
Yeah.
So, because he can kind of keep it in check most of the time, you know. So
he gives himself completely.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the phone call, the Rumble phone call.
Oh my God!
The goodbye.
Oh my God, that was so incredibly just, I started crying.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was crying. Neil was crying, you know, Emma was crying, Belle started crying, and I thought the words he spoke to her were incredibly powerful.
Well, I don't want to
love him all the more.
Yeah. I don't want to go off too far, but there is an idea where sometimes if you think you are dumb or poor or something, where there is a term that certain people say, I'm going to speak this word to you so that we can bypass all that stuff that maybe you've heard throughout your life, you know, that you are special, that you are whatever. And it was interesting. He said, you are a hero. So, I mean, and obviously she can't remember her past. And so these things that he was telling her, you're right. I mean, these are important things.
They're quality. They weren't details about her life. They were qualities about her that she needed to hear. And that I think it's important, you know, there's a thing that's kind of gone around on Facebook and stuff, and I can't quote it. I can't tell you exactly, but it's basically things you tell your daughter, find a guy who doesn't compliment, who doesn't flatter you. Find one who knows how to compliment you, and find one who, you know, instead of basically treating you like property, treat you like a queen, that sort of thing, where it's don't let just some guy tell you you're not worth what you are. And then the final thing is, and raise your sons to be these kind of men, you know, the good kind of men. So it is one of those things, you know, self-esteem is a huge problem for a very large number of the population on this planet, unfortunately. And because of that, especially with girls and young girls, they hear from other kids, from themselves, from their siblings sometimes, from, you know, who knows, but they hear you're not good enough. You're not worthy. There's a song, Orianthe, says, according to you, I'm useless. I'm not worth anything, but according to him, I'm the most beautiful thing he's ever seen. You know, and I think that's a great song. I think girls should take that to heart, because if some guy's telling you that, you don't need to be with them. And I think that was so important that Rumpel said those things to her, because even if she never remembers who she is, if she doesn't love him again, the fact is she still needs to know that she is something special. And, you know, because it is difficult when you look in the mirror and you don't know who you are. For a lot of reasons, you just don't know who you are. It's nice to have somebody who can help tell you who you are,
and
in a positive way.
Right. And it was also interesting that, he said, you know, you made me want to be a better man. And that line is kind of been used before.
Yes.
But you know, that is a powerful thing, you know.
He said, you make me want to go back to the best version of me.
Look,
I'm sorry, but you know what? That is heart melting. And I sat there and literally, I'm not going to lie, I sat there and just sobbed because that was just unbelievably so incredible. And then his last words, he didn't even say, I love you, because he knew that was going to not impact her. Thank you, Belle. Oh my gosh. That was so incredible. So incredible.
You know, there's, you know, we've kind of talked about, you know, flattery and different things and how words and manipulation and all this kind of stuff, you know, in relationships, you know, men look for different things, you know, beauty, intelligence, you know, lust, love, all these different things. But when you find a woman that makes you want to be the better version of yourself or better than you are, that's a keeper. And you know, that's what they put in the script. And I think, you know, it's not a nagging into it. It's more of, I value and I cherish this woman so much that, you know what, I'm going to do it because I want to, instead of because I'm being harangued about it. It was a touching moment, and it kind of I'm not crying. I'm just, you know, we just ate pizza and I didn't have any water here. You can vouch for.
Yes, that's true.
I didn't cry when I watched it either.
No,
I've cried before. Anyway, so it kind of reminded me of the scene with Gold, Emma, Henry, and Neil in Neil's apartment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where one situation kind of dovetailed into another and another and another in this room, in this area.
Right.
And so he had the phone call. And I'm going to try. Is, you know, the father and the son, you know, try to bear the axe. You know, he said,
he said, I didn't know you had it in you.
Right.
And it was that he goes, I am full of love. He said, I spent a lifetime looking for you. Mm-hmm. He says, yeah, but you broke our deal. And he goes, I made a bad choice. Mm-hmm. And that was just like, ah. Oh. And then that little last scene that just hooked me even more and just started the tears flowing even harder was when he said, may I? And he reached out his hand. And Neil, like a petulant little boy, said, I'm still angry.
But that's the truth, though.
Absolutely. I'm not bashing that. What I'm saying is that it just reminded me of a little boy mm-hmm. who says, I'm mad at you. Mm-hmm. But then he, through his tears, with incredible emotion, and Michael Raymond James, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. that was ridiculous, awesome, awesome, awesome scene, grabbed his hand and held on to it and started crying. I'm like, oh.
When
it was heart melting.
In my opinion, women have a memory for things. That is 3D, HD, it's all of the above. They can remember things down to the minute detail. What someone said, what they meant, the look on the face, the situation, all that kind of thing. But I'm telling you, men remember too.
Sure.
So, you know, it is, you know, women, I think, you know, kind of put on this brave face and kind of say hi to somebody they just hate because it's in front of a group of people.
Sure.
But they kind of move on beyond it, and then they talk behind their back, some of them, whatever, and all that. But a man is hard to kind of bridge that gap and say, you know, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? It's just, it's hard for a guy because it's just, it's emotion, and guys, for the most part, don't connect that way.
Right.
And so, you know, it was a great exchange between Gold and Bay because it was real. I mean, mm-hmm. look, I don't think it could have happened for everybody and like that and in a 2-minute period of time or 3 minutes, but that's kind of the exchange is, you know, you say, look, I'm sorry, you know, may I? And it's like, well, I'm still angry. And he still,
but then
you know,
he held his hand, and then he leaned on him, and they were hugging. I was mm-hmm. like, "Oh my god!" It was tear jerking. Yeah. It was heart wrenching. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. It was one of the most amazing scenes mm-hmm. in this entire show ever.
And I think that moment locked in Emma's love for Neil, because all that time.
Yeah.
And see, she went back to that moment too. Remember we talked about the moment where you hate someone or whatever?
Yeah.
That was the moment when she did time for him. That's all she brought up. But I think she forgave him because she saw, you know, that he's capable of it. And he reconnected with his father. And then she sees how important, you know, Neil is with Henry. Just kind of talking forward. I mean, Henry, we talked about it last time.
Yeah.
Henry's really the linchpin of this whole deal. You know, we saw the promo for the next episode, but mm-hmm. Henry is more important than all that. All the words and all the and all the that.
Oh, very much.
Where is Henry going to go? That's the question.
Right.
That's the more important question than any of this.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, and I will say this too. I think with the scene with Neil and Gold, Emma finally realized that there was a lot more to what happened with her and Neil than mm-hmm. what she understands.
Right.
Because now she finally gets Neil was basically in the same boat as her. The difference is he knew who he was and where he was from. She didn't.
Right.
But having to be separated from his father for all those years, I think she finally is getting the fact that it took its toll on him.
I wrote down here, it said, Neil, in quotes, "I'm still angry." And I said, "the dark side of emotion." So we've talked about the power of emotion in the script in this show about magic. But also the dark side of emotion can really just keep you seething.
Right.
And Neil, from what we know, wasn't using magic. So it was just eating him alive. Just over and over and over and over and over. You left me every night. I go to bed. I see you letting me go. I see you letting me go. And that pain, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it seems that he let it go.
Right, right. Well, so. And going back to the dark side piece, there is a very thin line between love and hate, good and evil. Very thin line.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode kind of showed how easy it is to cross back and forth between all of that.
Right.
It's so easy to cross back and forth between good versus evil. It's very easy between love and hate.
Mm-hmm. Back to the Future. That's what I thought of when I saw Rumpel's dagger.
His name was starting to fade out.
And then it came back. So
yeah, that was really interesting. That was really interesting. I did think it really funny speaking of future, going back, one of the lines that Rumpel said, which was hilarious, was when she was getting ready for the wedding and he said, "I love your dress." And she said, "Yeah, a queen or a princess or a queen needs to be Snow White." He goes, "Someday you're going to understand the irony of that."
Yeah, the future is full of irony.
Yeah. And it was, because that was actually prophetic too, because of the fact that the irony is that she's the one who gave that candle to Snow to try and convince her to turn evil, because that's what she wanted to have happen, and to erase that legacy from, you know, Snow's mother. And then what happens in this episode? She dies by her own evil, twisted plot.
And in the end, Cora was right. She did turn her heart black as coal.
Yeah, she did.
Because she did do the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for whatever reason.
Well, but again, so. I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, this is one of those scenarios. What do you do? What do you do? Do you let Henry's grandfather die, knowing you can't bring him back to life? Do you let his step-grandmother...
Mm-hmm. I know.
Die,
right?
Knowing that, not knowing whether or not you could potentially get her to do the right thing. You think you might be able to, but how do you know?
Right.
I mean, it was a tough decision, and she obviously didn't think through how Regina was going to react.
It made perfect sense when we found out that Cora did not rip out the heart of Henry's father.
When I saw her in there and she touched his heart with her hand, and his heart started thumping and you could hear it, and then she looked up at him, and she even made the comment, "You can't something about the heart. You can't rule the heart or whatever. You don't. What do you need that for? Love? Because he's the one who told her love is weakness.
Right.
That's where she got that.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't Rumpel.
Yeah.
That was her.
Mm-hmm.
So." When she did that, though, I knew she wasn't going to take his heart out, because it's her own heart that she had out. So I knew she was going to take it out. I knew she was going to. And I could see she was too in love with Rumpel to be able to function normally.
So again, it's another allusion to love and heart and, you know, her, you know, going back to, you know, Regina telling her when she thought she was dying or dead before, you know, "You're my weakness. You know, love is weakness." And Cora's heart was holding her back, so she ripped it out. So
right.
Couldn't.
Right.
Yeah. And so I don't know what Rumpel told her, how to make it a magical heart that is basically... You know, and we talked about it before, a soul. And you know, some people feel the soul is like the real you, the you in you.
And, right.
And so.
I think she just knew that if you take it out, you can control the person, but you can still survive unless you crush it. You
right.
can't. If you crush the heart, then obviously they die.
And you said that the scene when they lifted up the baby and everyone bowed was like the Lion King. So
I did
and Lion Queen, I guess.
It totally reminded me of Lion King, and I'm like, right. Wait, okay.
And then
Pride Rock.
Yeah, and we did hear, you know, Regina, because she will be queen.
And so, yes.
And yes, that's what exactly. It means.
Regina means queen. It's Latin for queen.
So, yeah, we were wrong about the decoy daggers.
Yes, we were wrong about that.
So, yeah. But now we see that the war is on. Regina versus Snow. And so when they came in and the big reveal at the end, you know, you did this.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. Snow convincing Regina to put her heart back in her. Mm-hmm. The sad fact is, if Regina had done that all along, Cora would have been a different person.
Right.
Because Cora was, and it was the truth. Cora without, Snow was right. Cora without her heart couldn't really love Regina.
And what she was inferring, and I think is the truth, is that would have changed her forever.
It would have.
Because she really would have loved her. And maybe she would have made a lot different choices.
She would have totally made different choices.
Yeah. So, so I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think so. The fact that Snow tried to stop Regina at the end after it was too late.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Right. Mm-hmm. And her sitting on the steps of the mausoleum, holding her head in her hands. That was kind of creepy, actually. And then Charming running up, "Are you okay? Are you okay? You were right. And he's like, "What did you do?" Mm-hmm. That was pretty intense.
Yeah. And, you know, Regina crying at the end, it was heartbreaking because, you know, I mean, she asked the question, what am I going to do now?
Well, the interesting thing is that, yeah, now without her mother,
right,
as we kind of talked about, she's going to go back to her old ways.
Right.
And what's interesting is, what's going to happen next?
Right.
I think, like we've said, Emma's going to learn some stuff to protect Henry. Henry's going to make a decision and say, "I don't want to be with either of you. You lied to me.
I want to live with Dad.
You are evil. I want to go live with my dad." Mm-hmm. Or he's going to try and, you know, stay somewhere else until he can forgive both of them.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's great. But yeah, definitely. We are screaming towards the finale. And these are really great, great episodes that are kind of building one on the other. So,
wow.
Really, really great stuff. As we wrap it up, I just want to say a couple of things. Thank you so much for retweeting the tweets about this and also tweeting out that you're listening to the at OUAT podcast, First Thoughts, about the Miller's Daughter. And if there's certain things that kind of, you know, you click with or you enjoyed too, you say, "I really love the scene with blah, blah, blah," or "I agree with whatever," or "I disagree," da, 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 da. Thoughts that you have as you're listening, when you tweet out and you have a hashtag of Once Upon a Time, the Miller's Daughter, whatever, this is going to let other people know that you're listening to our podcast, and which we're very thankful for. Mm-hmm. But then you kind of spread that out, so you let other people know that, hey, there's another podcast. You know, there's a number of them, and you're listening to this one, and this is what you think about it, and that. And we really, really appreciate it so much. And we're getting new folks, new listeners. I get emails here and there from new people, so I want to thank you for helping us by retweeting. And tweeting out that you're listening to us, and you know, on Follow Friday, different things. I really, really, really appreciate it. And I also want to say this: is if you shop at Amazon.com, please feel free to use our link. It's store.onceuponatimepodcast.com. You get to buy whatever you want, and we get a small percentage, which helps us buy different things for the podcast, so we can kind of continue on with that. So I think that's it.
Yeah.
And we are going to be recording another episode. It all depends on the... We've been getting more feedback lately. So
yeah, we have.
We've been getting more emails and voicemails and that kind of thing. We really appreciate it. So send it our way, and we'll record another episode here. And we're looking to doing another live show around the finale time. So just...
Yeah. Yeah, we will.
Just kind of letting you know that in advance. So I'll tweet out and we'll talk more about that. And but thanks for understanding. I doing a live show every Saturday with such a busy weekend is tough. And we've really enjoyed kind of the date nights. And lately we've had stuff with Lady and all kinds of different things going on. So I'm glad that we have that kind of time. Freedom on Saturday evening to kind of do definitely things that we need to do. So thanks for that. And I want to send big love out to everybody. And I hope that this finds you in a good spot. And if not, hopefully, things will get better for you. But I want to send big love out to everybody. And have a great day. Have a great week. And we'll be talking at you soon.
Yep.
See you guys.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for being a part of this podcast. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. This is Wayne Henderson, the voice of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. And if you want to know more about how my voice acting services might work for you, check out MediaVoiceOvers.com. And now, all of us here at Roni's Own Media and MediaVoiceOvers.com look forward to sharing the love and enjoyment of the Once Upon a Time TV show next time. Take care.